Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign with crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
This edition of Commodity Week was recorded Friday, August 24th, 2012. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media.
Support for Commodity Week comes from Agrigold Hybrids, featuring the Agrigold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgrigoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at ADM.com/FarmerView.
Pinning down the corn crop, we'll discuss that and more today on Commodity Week. Welcome to Commodity Week. This is Dave Dickey. Later this half hour, we'll talk with Pro Farmer editor Chip Flory, fresh off the Pro Farmer Midwestern Crop Tour. And in a few moments, we'll hand it off to Todd Gleason, who spent the week on our Follow the Corn bus tour down to the Mississippi Gulf. Here are the weekly settlements. Chicago September wheat had a high of 904 and 3 quarters, a low of 866. September wheat finishing the week at 867 and a half, down 7 from last week. July wheat finished at 852, up 9 and a half from a week ago. September corn had a high of 834, a low of 798 and 3 quarters. September corn finishing the week at 802 and a quarter, up 3 and 3 quarters from last week. December corn finishing the week at 808 and a half, up 1 and a quarter from a week ago. September soybeans had a high price of 1764 and 3 quarters, a low of 1667. September beans finishing the week at 1737 and a half, up 66 and a half from last week. November beans, the settlement 1731 and a half, up 85 and 3 quarters from a week ago.
From the Historic Cotton Exchange in Memphis, Tennessee, I'm Todd Gleason. This is Commodity Week. A special program today alongside with us on our Follow the Corn Tour, Dan Zwicker, who allowed us to open up some of the CGB and ZenNow grain elevators, not only in Mound City for a terminal and a railway, but at the Port of New Orleans. Thank you so much, Dan, for doing that. He's been with us for 3 days. We do appreciate that. Jackie Vakes has been along with us on the tour as well for Follow the Corn. She has been an integral part of our programming at Commodity Week for a long time, and I know the folks that are on the bus with us have appreciated having you there as a resource to talk to. And then John Bondurant, who opened up the Historic Cotton Exchange here in Memphis, Tennessee, is with us. Let's start with this question. On this week, we happen to be on our tour, but AgWeb and the Pro Farmer folks are also out on their crop tour. It appears that they spiked the market in corn really high this week. The difficulty with that one, Dan Zwicker, is that if you get a spike high, that often means it's a spike high and it went to new contract highs. And the question is, are we done?
I don't think so. Now, you could probably argue, since we weren't able to take out the August crop report high on this run up and then we settled back here at week's end, we still ended the week higher on corn. And I think basically it was an emotional market that was driven by lower than expected yields early. Monday, Tuesday, where people were thinking that these yield results were going to result in a much lower crop report than the August number was. And then toward the end of the week, the reports started coming in a little better and people began to second guess themselves. So it was an opportunity, I think, for a lot of longs to take their profits here on Thursday. So I think when you look at weekly closes, the uptrend stays intact. Corn is going to struggle. It's going to be up to soybeans, I think, to lift corn to the next level if we're going to go on up to the next level. And even though soybeans maybe had a reversal down here today because we had a tight range yesterday, we are up significantly for the week, and the chart pattern still looks to me like we're going higher.
Just a reminder that later in the program, you'll hear Dave Dickey talk with Chip Flory of Pro Farmer and give you some of the final numbers from those tours. But this program is recorded on a Thursday afternoon and not a Friday, so we haven't quite got all the numbers in. Jackie Vakes, Dan mentioned that he thought, and this has been kind of a common theme on Commodity Week the last several weeks, that soybeans would have to lead this market higher. They, too, made new contract highs this week.
Well, they certainly did. And I think when you look at the corn market, it's going to be difficult for corn to go a lot higher, primarily because of a lot of the bearish news that's going to continue to come out. We're going to hear more about higher food prices, more about the RFS waiver mandate, all of those types of things. So I think it's definitely going to take beans to be able to elevate it to the next level. Now, we've got strong support at the $8 level. That's the bottom line of the uptrend channel. And so as long as we can hold that level, I think we're in good shape. When it comes to the beans, you know, we'll see. We talk about Isaac coming into the marketplace. I don't know if it'll bring us enough rain to make them think that there's anything that's going to change. It's very unlikely. But beans are definitely where the trading is at this point in time.
John Bondurant, you sit in a unique place, much lower on the Mississippi than most of our folks are used to talking about. They love to hear from you. What's different about the harvest season this year than any previous years for beans or corn and placement, how the elevators have to handle it, what it means, whether it's going upstream or downstream, the kinds of things that are happening in a short crop here for corn?
First off, this is the earliest corn harvest we've ever had. My farms are going to finish today, tomorrow, or Saturday entirely. Highest yield we've ever had. We average almost 200 bushels, which is terrific. The South planted so much corn this year, and we have so few on-farm storage that I'm not sure how we're going to handle it all. I sell a lot of grain to ADM here in Memphis, and they're shipping more grain up north than they are south, which is amazing. Never happened before. Our basis is the lowest I've ever seen, other than Katrina. It's 55 off. So what was your other question?
Well, that brings to mind a secondary question, which is you have good yields. I suspect that you don't have aflatoxin. Does that mean that most of your grain will go to feed livestock? And then the question is, which direction does it go?
Well, it's going to go north right now because the basis is cheap and we've got a plentiful supply and don't have any place to store it. Eventually, it's going to end up in the southeast, I'm thinking, to the broiler industry. The export market is pretty much dead. There's nothing going south.
But wait, how do you get to the southeast? That seems like an odd place for corn for here. Does it get railed? And I can't imagine that's an easy task.
Well, it can get railed or it can get trucked. But, I mean, normally Indiana and Illinois, southern Illinois corn ends up in Georgia. Well, y'all haven't got any. So it's gonna end up there some way, shape, or form, I would expect. The elevators here are putting corn on the ground, which they've never done. If they can buy corn at 55 off, it's a slam dunk for them. So they're buying all they can get their hands on, and somehow they're going to ship it.
It seems to me, Dan Zwicker, that if this is the corn that's coming in without aflatoxin, and we're looking at a crop, and we don't really know in Minnesota, Iowa, Illinois, Indiana yet, Nebraska, whether aflatoxin is or is not a problem, but it's more likely than not, that his 55 under could change pretty dramatically, pretty quickly.
Well, the function of the market is to pull corn north at this point in time. I mean, you've got Central Illinois processing plant that needs corn desperately. They're sitting in the middle of the area where corn yields are going to be probably the lowest. There was no carryover stocks in that area. So with the export market basically dead, and you can see that with this week's export sales, we're not selling anything. This Memphis corn can move north, move it up to St. Louis, take it off the barges, put it on trucks or put it on rail, and take it on into the processing plant. So I think you're going to see some very interesting plays. Now, soybeans is going to be a real fight, I think. The exporters are going to want soybeans, and the processors are going to want soybeans. And the advantage that the exporters have over the processors is that they can stand for delivery. And they're going to want to pull every bean they can get their hand on down to the Gulf to fulfill the commitment that we have on new crop beans. We've got new crop bean export sales are twice what they were a year ago, and they continue to sell beans. We saw a lot of sales announcements here this morning. So you're going to have a fight between the processor and the river, but the advantage the exporter has, he can stand for delivery. The processor can too. It's going to be interesting how the commercial grain trade handles or hedges. It looks to me like nobody's going to want to be anywhere close to the nearby spot month because they're afraid somebody's going to make them force delivery on that. So I think you're going to see bids based upon the cash market maybe 1 month or 2 months out.
Given all that information, does it tell you anything about marketing soybeans and producers can store or they can sell it across the scale at this point, and they have many other options along the way? If the export market can buy them, use them, mm-hmm. but the processors can't quite stand for them at this time, what are their options?
Well, I think, you know, it's always a matter of storage. There's no question about that. And deciding where they really think the best basis is going to come from. And I think when you look at historically, when you have a really tight battle for beans, and this carryout number that we have projected is so very low, you know, you could see bean basis pick up a buck. You could see bean basis pick up even more than that. But corn can too. You know, I was just out on the East Coast. It was $1.90 over on the East Coast. In Nebraska right now, they're paying even. They're giving them free DP. It's a matter of individual choice as to what they want to store. And can beans get to $18 plus a dollar over? I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, I think it's very viable and very real. So I think the individual has to know what they can stand. And they also have to understand if they make the sale, they can't have buyer's remorse.
Well, let me ask a different question. And John, I'll have you answer this one last, but I want to hear from Jackie and from Dan. Is there a reason that, and my brother uses this one, that he shouldn't use the marketing plan that he likes to call STF, which is shuck it, truck it, and find a golf course at this point?
I don't know. I mean, that's one of the reasons why I got out of the market advisory business. I think with the basis levels and, you know, it's kind of difficult to want to hang on to this early harvested corn. I think it just makes probably a little more sense economically to take the bird in the hand rather than two in the bush, bring home the cash. And if you wanted to re-own it later, you can do so, I think, with call options or something like that. I would not necessarily do it on all my crop, but I do think the people that are moving in Central Illinois and Indiana, I know I saw pictures on Facebook that they are moving. It's kind of hard for them to turn that down, especially the situation that we have in corn. We do have some South American inventories that are going to move their way into the United States. That's going to satisfy a lot of that Southeast rail market. So I think at least short term here, I would be more apt to maybe do some of that.
I think basically what, you know, it's going to be so, you have to make your decision based on where you're located. We have parts of Northern Illinois into Wisconsin into Minnesota that really have pretty good strong test weight corn. If they've got themselves in a position where they've got to put in place to be able to protect themselves to the downside, they may want to hang on to that corn because it may become a lot more valuable because of the test weight situation. When you look at all of us down here in Illinois, Indiana, places like that, I think you probably want to move it out if you can.
I'd like to say something about the soybean basis. Difference between November and March beans is $1 a bushel. Mm-hmm. Brazil and Argentina are going to plant early because they want it. And I think if you got beans, sell them as fast as you can get them off the truck because you don't want to carry it into the inverse. And if you're a bull, then go out there and buy some options on March that are $1 cheaper. But the market is screaming for Brazil to plant early, and Argentina has gotten lots of rain lately, so I think there's a huge risk. and I wouldn't carry a bean at all.
Well, John's thinking like a commercial hedge trader. And farmers should probably take some clues from that. And you always want to sell the front end if it's way above the distance. I mean, that's what the market is telling you to do, is to move that inventory into the marketplace. And if you want to really own it at a later time, or even for the short term, go in and buy a distant month in the back, so you're still on board if these beans do want to travel on into the 20s at some point in time, you would at least have an opportunity to do that.
Right. No, I think what you've got to really do is look at your individual situation. You know, if you have the storage, you have to decide what you want to hang on to. If you have good test weight corn, you hang on to that, and you move the beans. It all comes down to you, and, you know, it's just a circumstance where, as an individual business person, you have to make that decision at your farm. You can't, you know, we can't do it for you. And so I think that, in general, when it comes to beans in the past, in most cases, we were better off selling beans. I'm not so sure I agree with you this year, though.
This is Jim Angel, state climatologist located at the Illinois State Water Survey at the Prairie Research Institute on the campus of the University of Illinois. This week started out with much cooler than normal temperatures before warming back up into the 80s by Friday. After some rain fell in eastern and southern Illinois last week, this week has been much drier with only a few scattered showers around the state. While August so far has been much cooler than July and about a degree below normal, the dry weather has continued for much of the state. In fact, much of western and northern Illinois are running 1 to 2 inches below normal. For the weekend, we can expect highs in the 90s across Illinois on Saturday. A cold front will move through the state on Sunday, bringing cooler temperatures with the highs in the mid-80s and a chance of rain on Sunday and Sunday night. Rain amounts could be as high as an inch in western Illinois, where they certainly need it the most. Next week will be warm with highs in the 80s and lows in the 60s, which is about normal for this time of year. There is no significant chance of rain through about Thursday. Right now we have Tropical Storm Isaac that is heading towards the Gulf and is expected to reach hurricane strength this weekend. One of the long-range models shows the remains of Isaac reaching Illinois on Friday or Saturday with substantial rainfall. This is Jim Angel, Illinois State Climatologist at the Illinois State Water Survey.
You're listening to Commodity Week. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now by phone is Pro Farmer editor Chip Flory, just back in the office from the completed Pro Farmer Midwestern Crop Tour. Thanks for being with us today, Chip.
Absolutely, Dave, and thank you for all the coverage this week out there on the tour. We try to get the information that we find out there on the tour out to as many people as we can. And you were a big part of that this week.
Well, thank you for that. So, without further ado, what are the national numbers?
Okay, now, we got to remember that this is the Pro Farmer estimate.
Yes.
It's not the Crop Tour estimate. We're not going to speak for any of the scouts. What we do is we take the tour data and we put our analysis on it, and some of the scouts might have a different way of analyzing the same set of data and come up with a different number. This is just the way that we do it, and these are the results that that we're happy with. On corn, we put the national average corn yield at 120.25 bushels per acre. That puts the crop at 10.478 billion bushels. At this time of the year, we take a plus or minus 1%, and we always do that, and we always say that it's because of the maturity of the crop. This year, we went ahead and put the plus or minus on it, but we're not going to see this crop change a whole lot, either up or down. It was by far the most mature corn crop that we have ever sampled. So you know, I don't think we're going to see a whole lot of movement from that 120 bushel level. On soybeans, we put the crop at 34.8 bushels per acre. That's a crop of 2.6 billion bushels. On soybeans, we take a plus or minus 2% because there's still that much more of the soybean yield to be determined, and we are going to take that 2% this year. You know, that if we would continue to get, if we would suddenly start to get a wetter pattern across the Midwest, it could be better than 34.8 bushels per acre. But if it stays hot and it stays dry, that 34.8 bushels per acre, there's some downside risk left in it.
Tell us a little bit about how you take that raw data that is collected all week, put it in the blender on Friday, and then come up with those numbers.
You bet. What we do is we take all the samples that we collect on corn, and this is the process that we use on corn. We take all the samples that we collect on corn, and we put them into one spreadsheet, and we calculate one simple average of all the samples. This year we had 1,196 corn yield samples from the seven states, and so it was a good effort out there by the Crop Scouts. That there is no doubt about that. Now the reason that this works and that we trust those numbers as they come out is because of the way the tour is run. We only spend a morning in South Dakota, and as a result of that, we pull somewhere in the range of 40, 45 samples out of South Dakota, and that's about the right number of samples to pull from the state. Now, we spend a full day and a half in Nebraska. We spend basically 2 days in Iowa. We spend a full day in Minnesota and a full day in Illinois. Now, things get shortened up a bit again when we get into Indiana, and we only spend a morning in Ohio. So by limiting the number of samples that we pull from a state like South Dakota and Ohio and really hitting the big states hard in Illinois, Iowa, Nebraska, and pulling big sample numbers out of those states, that's what weights the system for us. And then, of course, we have to put some analysis on the final result there. Since we've been doing this, since 1997, since we've been releasing the crop estimates, on average, that number that we calculate, the simple average of all the samples, has been about 7 bushels above USDA's final number. And that makes sense to us because when you go through those bigger yielding Corn Belt states, by golly, you better have a number that ends up being bigger than the national average. And on average, it's been about 7 bushels per acre. So it's a process that we fret over and everything, and it's something that we put a lot of serious thought and effort into. And this year I'm feeling pretty confident in this number as we move forward. Now, one change that we did do as well, though, Dave, is we actually anticipate that USDA's planted acreage estimate for corn, mm-hmm, is going to go up about 1 million acres yet.
Right.
We're basing that off the FSA certified acreage data. So we see that number going up about 1 million acres, but we also took the percent of harvested acres down to 89.5%, and that left our harvested acres at 87.1 million, which is about 225,000 acres less than what USDA estimated in August 1. So, you know, these numbers that we put together, these are, it wouldn't matter what the USDA numbers are when we're coming up with our yield estimate. We base it on this tour number and our analysis of it. And then, of course, we have to do some observations of the areas outside of the crop tour, like down in southern Illinois. I mean, my goodness, we had to take that into account. We had to take the problems down in southern Indiana into account. And the crop tour, just we don't go through that area for a couple of reasons. Number one, we just simply don't have the time in a tour like this. And number two, we've got some people in place down in those areas that give us some good intelligence on the crop back. And we get down in the area and take a look at it for ourselves before we head out on tour as well.
What did you do with harvested acres for soybeans?
Again, this gets back to planted acres, okay? The FSA data suggests that there's going to be an increase in planted soybean acres as well. So even though we took the yield down to 34.8 on soybeans, harvested acreage, and you'll have to forgive me, I don't remember exactly what it is, but harvested acres is our harvested acreage tally on soybeans is actually up from USDA's August 1 number, but our crop is down because of the lower yield at 34.8.
Was it stunning to you that the pods weren't there?
Yes. I mean, to me, that was by far the biggest surprise of the tour. You know, we knew that we were going to get into a South Dakota corn crop that was really going to be bad, and we knew that we were going to see a lot of corn chopped, and we knew that there was a chance that we were going to see combines rolling in parts of the tour, and obviously we did. But the thing that surprised me the most was that pod count. My gosh, it's absolutely amazing to me, you know, because soybeans are ornery. That's how Ken Ferry, the Farm Journal agronomist, describes them. They're just flat-out ornery. You make them mad, and you stress them a little bit here, and you stress them a little bit there, and it just they just respond by putting on more blooms and more pods. Well, these beans may have bloomed heavily, and they may have even podded heavily, but they didn't have the strength to hold on to those pods this year, and I think that's why we're seeing the reduced pod counts that we did.
Before I let you go, what else do we need to know from the tour?
Yeah, there is still risk in these numbers. There is, you know, maybe not so much on the corn side, but on the soybean side, there is still risk in the number. If the weather pattern that we're in right now holds, there's downside risk in this thing because that bean is still filling. The bean pod or the beans themselves are still trying to get bigger. And if we can give them a shot of rain, we could see the yield go up. But if we don't get that rain, Dave, we're at real, real risk of seeing an even lower bean yield for the U.S. And, you know, you look at the demand in this market, soybeans in particular, our crush is still strong. Just this week after a 90-cent rally or something like that in the first 2 days of the week. Even after that, China came in and was buying beans. There is strong, solid demand in this market, and I'm not sure what price it's going to take to slow things down. And if we have an even lower crop than what we estimated here at 2.6 billion bushels, and we got to find some way to ration even more off the demand side to make sure that we got some beans left over at the end of the 12-13 marketing year, I'm not sure what price that's going to take.
Thanks, Chip.
You bet, Dave. Thank you.
That's Pro Farmer editor Chip Flory, and a tip of the hat to Todd Gleason for his work on our Follow the Corn tour. This is Dave Dickey.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at ADM.com/FarmerView.